Hi, welcome to anyone who's going to be watching this, wherever and whenever you're watching. I have with me, taking time out of what I think is probably a very busy schedule, but I have Sonia Mitchell from Jumpship Brewing in Scotland. And Jumpship, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Sonia, but are you the only specialist non-alcoholic brewery in the country?
Yeah, we're the only one that's a physical brewery brewing our own beer.
Okay, so I'm sorry, I put the camera there, it went all funny. So you're, I know you're really busy. You've had a really busy couple of weeks, but maybe we should go back a little bit to the start. I mean, where's your background and how did you decide to create a brewery? Is your background in brewing or?
No, not at all. So my background is in beer drinking.
In the club.
So, yeah. I don't have a background in brewing or the drinks industry. I came into this because I was really frustrated by the lack of decent options when I started to cut back on alcohol. So I've always had really bad hangovers and it was something that I just kind of pushed aside in my 20s. But as I got into my sort of 30s with kids and a job, I just couldn't do it anymore. But I still really wanted a beer, particularly like a beer on a Tuesday night, just that kind of end of the day, sit down. And the alcohol-free beers on the market weren't good enough. I felt like I was drinking a German lager and I'd normally drink quite locally. I'm not from Scotland originally, but I've made it my home for the past 14 years and I support a lot of the local breweries here and they have, you know, fantastic options. I'm like, why am I being shortchanged just because I don't want the alcohol? So that just felt wrong and it annoyed me. Why don't I do it? With no knowledge or anything, and then the idea just wouldn't let me go. And I talked to a few friends and I realized that I wasn't the only person hitting at this point in life where alcohol becomes a bit more of a problem and that it's just not working for your lifestyle anymore. But everyone's bemoaning the fact they wanted a good beer. And so I just took it step by step from there. It's like, well, let's just see if I can make one that tastes nice. And so I did a startup brewing course, learned a lot about the process and realized how much more there was to learn. Like, just totally fell in love with the biochemistry and organic process of brewing. But kind of also realized I was going to probably need a 4-year degree from Heriot Watt to do with the beer that I wanted to do. But fortunately, I met a brewer while I was on the course who had developed a low alcohol beer and was wanting to work with me on getting a recipe that not only tasted good, but that I could take to a commercial brewery and scale. So I had a really clear idea of the beer that I wanted to use, the kind of types of malts and hops and the profile. I wanted it to be a lager because I just feel like lager's been so abused, particularly in the alcohol-free section, you know, just like really crappy lagers. But there is something joyful about a really crafted, full-flavored, tasty lager. And it's what I wanted to drink. And that's basically what's guided most of my decisions is what do I want to drink? And then hopefully other people will drink it too. So we did 3 batches of a lager on sort of 30-liter equipment, and one of them was spot on, and everyone I shared it with loved it. I took it around to my independent local bottle shops, and they loved it. And I thought, okay, right, I've got a beer here that needs to be drunk, so I'm going to have to take a deep breath and take the next step.
Right, so I mean that's a lot to take in there. So. I don't know, I've got 4 questions out of all of that. But yeah, just saying, I mean, so you went, you set up, you decided you needed a beer, you decided to go and do a course, you decided to, like, at what stage did you decide that this was going to be a viable, I am going to have a brewery?
Well, the having my own brewery has always been the goal. I mean, who doesn't want a brewery? The first huge hurdle was to, like, obviously setting up a brewery is a big cost, and I wanted to get a beer to market first to make sure that I had something that people wanted. So I went down the contract model to begin with, but that, you know, finding a brewery willing to take on my beer was really hard. I'm really determined to brew in Scotland, and finding the right partner that was willing to let me have control of the process and how I wanted it to be brewed, who also wasn't too busy, because and had capacity, because it took a while to find the right people to brew with. And then it was really difficult to get the beer right at scale. That was a massive learning curve for me, I think, to begin with. I thought, I don't know, I've got this recipe, I've brewed 30 litres of it, it's perfect. Now we can brew 2,000, it'll be grand. But no, it was a lot more complicated than that. And this was 4 years ago now, where the categories moved so fast. Like, the brewing knowledge back then isn't what it is now. So kind of we made, kind of had to make some mistakes at the start to learn out how to make it better. But we finally, it took a year to get beer in can that I was ready to launch. And that was December 2019. So we all know what happened after that. So I had a great launch. I did pay for the first production. I had, the 200 people waiting for their beers to be delivered, which is like the best way to start, people who kind of were excited about what I was doing. And then then it was getting COVID, all the rest of that. Production during COVID was horrible. Breweries furloughing, coming off furlough, shortage of cans, trying to get the beer canned anywhere. Quality issues because everyone was working at 100 miles an hour, really stressed with all the uncertainty. Yeah, it was kind of just thought, if I can get through 2020 and I'm still standing, that's an achievement. And then kind of as the world, but we did well, like a lot of businesses, building online sales that I wasn't expecting. But that was really lovely to actually have this kind of direct to consumer business, talking directly to people who are enjoying the beer, and that's kind of stayed with us as we've grown. It was probably start of last year, which is that I kind of thought, right, okay, we're kind of ready now to take the next step for the brewery. And finding the right site has been really difficult. I wanted it to be sort of in and around Edinburgh. That's where my home is. Industrial space is hard to find. And then I kind of, after a few false starts, we found this amazing site, which is actually a bit further out of Edinburgh, out in Midlothian, on a farm. But it's a really great community of producers out here. We've got space. We've got renewable energy that we can brew from, and so we've probably ended up waiting. Like, I think I told initially the unit would be ready in January, and it's now December, and we're nearly there. So there's been a lot of waiting, but this is the right place for us to be, and we're pretty much nearly there. I'm looking out the window, and there's some hoists being delivered off of a pallet waste truck. So that's exciting.
No, we were actually going to talk last week, but you were getting your canning line set up, so it's.
Yeah. So the canning line was delivered last week, and it's brilliant. Because I think actually almost the packaging of the beer has been the hardest thing as a low and no producer. If you don't have alcohol in the beer, it's basically like a soft drink in terms of its vulnerability to infection and re-fermentation. And it's kind of a challenge that a lot of brewers are looking at. Some are going down the route of potassium sorbate and those kind of additives to preserve shelf life. But for us, pasteurization, I think, is a better route to maintain the quality and the sort of cleaner ingredients. So these hoists are meaning that we can lift our cans into the pasteurizer, and so having all of that in-house under every aspect of the process we can control, which is amazing because every aspect of the process affects the flavor. Pasteurization affects the flavor as well, and by doing it ourselves, we can really fine-tune it, like what's the minimum amount that we can do to get the shelf life, but to keep as much flavor in as possible. I just organized a little or ordered a little PU meter, so we can just really get all the data points and really just fine tune everything, which, because we haven't been able to do all of this ourselves up until now, I just think everything can get a bit better.
Right.
I'm really excited about that.
Yeah. So, obviously it's a huge step, but how difficult was it? Or do you think it is more difficult, like, doing the contract brewing as a non-alcoholic beer than if you were brewing it alcoholic?
Absolutely. It's a really fine-tuned process, and there's nothing to hide behind in a non-alcoholic beer, because, you know, our beers are less than 0.5%, which is for us to be able to describe them as alcohol-free. If you think a standard alcoholic beer, you're allowed a variation of 0.5% as standard from a duty perspective. So our entire fermentation is fitting in the margin of a variance that most brewers don't even have to consider.
Right.
Managing that fermentation, because the fermentation is critical. I don't know, there's different ways of producing alcohol-free beer. Some people are stripping the alcohol out. You need like £1 million the alcoholizer to do that. But I think also you're taking out the flavor as well, and then you need to add stuff back in to make the beer taste right. So we've designed our beers to taste as they should. But that means we do need to kind of manage the temperature throughout the process carefully, to monitor the fermentations to make sure we stop it at the right point. And getting the right extract in the beer, because everything is marginal. So every point in the process, everything we're doing is about getting the flavor in. And if something changes in that process, then it can dip. And so, you can probably say I'm standing a bit of a control freak, but I probably am when it comes to my beer. And when it's not your own brewery, you're not there every day. And I think the other thing, as I've talked about before, is finding sort of then the canning and the pasteurization. There's very few places where you can do all of that on one site, particularly if you're smaller volume. And for me, I want to do smaller volume so I can have a range and not just have a beer that I pump out. So we've mostly had to brew on one site and then package and pasteurize on another site. And that's moving beer mid-process. That's never great. And then just the logistics of booking all those different slots and coordinating them just means we've been not particularly flexible, and we suddenly have a big demand for one of our beers and it's going to take us 8 weeks before we can get more of it. It's got us to where we are now, which is great, but I'm just beyond excited to have it all in house.
No, excellent. So when do you think, you haven't actually brewed there yet, have you?
So we've brought beer in that we've brewed off site to commission the canning line, which is a bit back to front, but we just kind of that's how we could get that part of the process going. And we were hoping to brew before Christmas. I think we're likely now to be doing like a hot water brew before Christmas, just kind of like a trial run of making sure everything works. And then I think hoping our first brew day might be the 8th of January. So we'll go off, have a really good rest over Christmas because we're all knackered, and then come back with lots to do in January.
Right. So the other thing then, obviously, you mentioned there that you started, the whole market has changed because, like you said, you started with a lager. And I think those of us who are old enough to remember, non-alcoholic beer used to be terrible. It was absolutely terrible. And that's why, I remember growing up, like, if you weren't drinking, it was a Coke or something, and I just got sick of Coke. But it has changed, and the market has changed. What used to come out then was, there was obviously still a demand for it, but no one was producing it other than, like, you used to have maybe Heineken, and they'd have a non-alcoholic Heineken. There was no specialist breweries or nobody doing something different, they didn't, like you said, they were stripping the alcohol out, which changes the taste and things like that. So where do you think all of that is changed? Do you think the market is older people now, like you said, who've reached a stage in life where they're not going out every night? Or I keep hearing that even younger people are drinking less alcohol than they used to. Where do you think the market is?
I think there's sort of two different kind of groups of people. So there's young people who've never drunk, people in their late teens, early 20s, and just not interested in alcohol. I think there's various factors behind that. I think social media has been quite a big influence in that kind of people moderating their behaviour online and not wanting to look crap in their selfies. And I think for those group of people, they're just looking for interesting adult drinks. It doesn't necessarily have to be a beer for them, but I'm kind of excited to introduce beer for them because, you know, it's a brilliant drink. There's so many diversity of flavors and it's actually quite healthy, particularly when it's not alcoholic. And then there are people who slightly older who have drunk beer quite heavily in their 20s, and then hitting a point where it's not working for them. And I think because of it's kind of these are people who've kind of gone through the craft beer revolution who kind of have realized the choice and the variety and quality of beer. And just because you're not drinking alcohol anymore, that part of you doesn't go away. You still want to enjoy good beer. And I think that's kind of where the push for sort of higher quality, more interesting craft alcohol-free beer has come from. And I think COVID sort of accelerated all of that because I think, you know, we're all locked up at home. I think a lot of people drank quite a lot in the first lockdown. And then just got to sort of, it's kind of like May 2020, just suddenly it went like that. And I think it's because people just realized that this is going on a long time and I feel like crap and I need to make some changes in my life. And alcohol is just kind of like a really easy thing. Well, it's not easy, but you know, it's an obvious thing to cut back on and immediately feel better. And so I think while people were at home, they started trying things, ordering things to discover at home with less of the stigma of going to a pub and asking for an alcohol-free beer. And I think it's kind of a big period of discovery for people to realize, oh, there is more than Heineken or Beck's Blue out there. There's actually some more interesting beers going on. And I think then as the world opened up again, people were like, you know, I don't actually have to just stand for going into a pub and there being one non-alcoholic option that's warm and dusty from the cellar. There are better beers out there. So I think it's kind of people driving the demand for better beers because and once you've discovered one, you want to discover more. I think there was a trend before COVID to people wanting to take more care of their health and well-being. I think mental health is a really big part of it as well, because if you're hungover, you feel crap. You're more likely to be kind of increases depression, anxiety, all of those things that we're struggling with. So I think it's definitely a long-term trend that's here to stay. I think we're just in general drinking less alcohol. And I'd say most of the people who buy my beer still drink alcohol. They're just drinking less. And they want to be a bit more of control when and how they drink. So you might go out and have a non-alcoholic beer, and then an alcoholic beer, and then a non-alcoholic beer. You know, it's kind of overall through the night, you've maybe had three or four beers, but you've drunk half of the alcohol that you might have drunk before.
Yeah, that's actually interesting, because I was going to say, like, it's obviously not a, you know, an either or. It's not that you're giving up alcohol for good, but I didn't think of it really in terms of, you know, maybe alternating beers on the same night. I was thinking like some nights, like I said, like some nights you just sit down, you love a beer, but you know you have to get up the next morning and you just cannot handle even one beer anymore. It just leaves you foggy headed, you know, you reach that stage. But yeah, I mean, it makes sense as well that you, like you said, you might just have one or two beers and then you switch to a non-alcoholic or something like that thing, whereas before you'd be that kind of the unforgivable thing here would be you'd be skipping your round or something because you just wouldn't do it, whereas now you can just have a beer. Which brings me actually to the point, because you're a specialist non-alcoholic brewery, there aren't an awful lot even globally right now there, but they are seeming to come out. Do you think that is the way it's going to go, rather than more kind of like Heineken or other craft brewers bringing out a non-alcoholic version of an existing beer? Do you think it's more likely that it to be special?
I think, I think there's going to be a mixture. And I think the amount of money that the likes of Heineken have put into advertising helps everyone, because it helps everyone to kind of just kind of normalize alcohol-free beer more. And then people go looking for something more interesting. And I think a lot of the sort of bigger non-alcoholic, like normal alcoholic craft breweries will look at bringing a no and low into their ranges, because, you know, if you've got a tap room, you know, you want to have choices in there for people. But I think there's a role for the specialist brewers like us, because it is a fiddly and painful thing to produce. You know, you have to be able to manage the shelf life aspect of it. I think there's been a few too many exploding cans in the no and low space. And to have a range of styles and choices. And I think when you come to look at yeast, there's just, I feel like we're only skimming the surface of what can be done in this space in terms of brewing. To kind of have a single-minded focus for people like us just means that we can do more and go further and really push innovation and choice, which I think is really important. Like, and you know, just like basic stuff like come and do a brewery tour, you know, and doesn't matter if you don't drink, you can drive. Yeah. You know, there's a whole aspects of beer that have been just shut off to groups of people because they don't want alcohol. So I'm kind of excited to have events and things like that where everyone's welcome.
Yeah. Because just bringing it back, like I was wondering, the reason it was coming to me, or the question was coming to me, was specifically you, from what you were saying, like, I know brewers can brew, you know, your imperial stouts, which are 12%, and they're also then session beers at around 3.5%. But it seems like getting to that next stage down seems like it's a whole new skill set.
Yeah, yeah. And I think even like going from I could brew a very good 2% beer quite easily. But it's getting down to that less than 0.5.
Yeah.
And even just measuring the alcohol at that stage, you need, you know, we lab test now, we have an hands-on part. It just to be really precise, because, you know, particularly from a licensing point of view, 0.52 is different from 0.48. So you need to be precise in how you're doing it.
And how are you checked on that then? Or like, do you have to take measurements, or does someone come and verify? Because presumably, like I said, it might, you know, that is a tiny margin. You could easily drop to one side of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not regulated at the moment.
Okay.
I think that that might change in the future as the category grows. I feel like the guidelines and the legislation are catching up with category, because a lot of it is now out of date. In terms of labeling, I think strictly speaking, our beer is in the de-alcoholized category, which makes no sense because our beer is not de-alcoholized. So we use the language alcohol free, which is kind of where the category is at, but actually that terminology needs to be, the government needs to come and just like really define what is alcohol free, what is low alcohol, what are the standards for it, how do we make the alcohol declaration, and kind of standardize that across the industry, because at the moment it is a bit confusing, and people are doing different things, so there's a bit of work to be done there.
I guess, though, it makes it, like you mentioned COVID, when you started during COVID and the online sales, I suppose it made it much easier for you there. You didn't have to worry about licensing on that. You could just go out.
Yeah.
Super.
Yeah.
So how are you getting the word out then? Like, how's your marketing, I suppose? Like, how do people know, and where can they get you? And, you know, how do you get the word out that people go in and they ask for beer?
Yeah, so a lot of it's been done just kind of through social media, email marketing. We've got a really nice database of people who open our emails and talk to them that way. Getting much better known locally, just getting listed in more bars and restaurants. I think that's a great place to get the brand discovered, because also at that point you don't normally have a big choice of options. So if you kind of go into a pub and you're expecting like a Heineken or something, and they're like, oh no, we've got to jump ship. You're like, oh, this is interesting. I'm drinking a stout. I'm drinking an IPA. So we get quite a lot of people finding our brand that way. Yeah, I mean, there's tons more that we can do. I think up until 6 months ago, it was only two of us in the business. So and the online shops who do like the mixed beer discovery packs, that's quite a good way to kind of get our beer in front of people as well, because quite often when people first make decisions to cut back on alcohol, they just want to try loads of different things because they don't know what they want to drink, they don't know what's out there. So making sure that our can is one of the cans that they're trying when they're at that point, then when they find their favorite, they'll come and buy more.
And do you think, like, at this stage, it's still people going in and just asking, you know, do you have a non-alcoholic beer, and they take what, you know, the bar happens to be stocking you, so they give them that, or are they starting to come in and ask for you by name?
Yeah, no, they're definitely starting to ask for us by name. I think we're much better known in Scotland than we are in the rest of the UK, although it's something we're working on. But I got that feedback recently from a pub in Edinburgh that just started listing us, saying, oh, we have people come in today who came here specifically because they wanted to drink Jump Ship. And I'm like, yay, that's what I want to hear.
Yeah, no, that must be an incredible validation. I mean,
yeah.
I suppose the other thing I kind of have to ask you about, I know you probably can't say much, but the other thing that's been filling up your life a bit lately is that you've been having trouble with BrewDog.
Yes.
I don't know how much you can talk because I know there's legal stuff, but I mean, is there anything you can kind of give a background on that, or what you think?
Yeah. I mean, it was a really big and difficult thing to take on. That, as you can see, you know, there's plenty going on just getting the brewery up and running and building a business and everything that goes with that. They came out into the market with a beer with the same name as ours. They tested out marketing material using the line, "It's time to jump ship." And it just felt that unless we take a stand, that we're going to lose on all that goodwill that we've been working really hard to build up in the beer name. But the only way that we could, I kind of felt the only way we could get their attention was to take the course of action we have, which is to go down the legal route. They're defending their claim, so we have to go through this process, which unfortunately will take, I think, between 12 and 14 months. So there's kind of a long process to follow through now. But, you know, to me, the names matter. Like, I could have just come out with a lager and a pale ale and IPA, but, you know, I deliberately put names behind them. So we've got Yarda and we've got Shore League, which is our sort of series of summer beers, because I think, you know, I love an iconic beer when you just kind of ask for it by name and kind of, and I think it brings more of a story and a character to the beer. So I spend a lot of time and effort into coming up with our beer names, and there's a reason why I've chosen them. And I think we need to protect that work that we've put into it.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Well, what I couldn't, and I don't have the thing, but I've seen their poster, and it is very much a copy of, you know, your branding. But what I couldn't understand, and I don't know if you want to comment on it, is, I mean, what they're selling, it wasn't a non-alcoholic beer. They're still not in the non-alcoholic beer. So it seemed to be, it's not even trying to take away from you. It seemed to be just trying to mess up the whole category or something, like just for fun. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I can't comment on why they've done what they've done. I think when you've got two beers with the same name in the same market, and you know, we're both based in Scotland, if someone says I've tried this great Shore League beer, you know, that's Shore League, which Shore League is it? I had a couple of people comment on the post, oh, I thought you were doing a collaboration with them. Certainly not what we want to get across. And I can't ignore the fact that they tend to bring out alcohol-free versions of most of their core range. So I wouldn't be surprised if at some point we see an alcohol-free version of this beer.
Yeah, no, they're a company that have not developed a huge reputation, or they've destroyed their own reputation in recent years. But anyway, I think, yeah, I know. Look, I don't want to get you in trouble talking any more about it. But so where do you think, I mean, your beers now are in sale? Is it primarily in Edinburgh, or is it all over?
So we've got kind of across, so mainly across the Central Belt, so Glasgow around there, we've got about, I think about 250, 260 independent stockists. A few places down south tend to be sort of specialist bottle shops, craft beer pubs who are looking to bring in something a bit more interesting. We also still sell a lot online through our own website, jumpship.beer, and through other sort of specialist alcohol-free websites. But we're certainly looking to increase our distribution and get our beer into more places. Because you know, the easiest ways to reach new drinkers is to be in new places, and also, you know, hopefully move into draft, as you know, with as well as can, because I think that for me is the ultimate, is the alcohol-free pint, because then it's just a pint of beer and who cares what the ABV is.
Yeah, if you can get it, yeah, if you can just get it from the tap next to the other tap, then it's, yeah, it's just normalized. And that's, I spoke to someone before, and like that was one of the things we had, like why every bar doesn't have just one tap even of, you know, non-alcoholic lager or something. That, but no one could, we couldn't quite figure out, except that, I don't know, you know, that there should be enough sales there that if it's available, people will just take it. But
Yeah, and I think the category for that is quite new still, and it's certainly not every place that has the rate of sale to justify it. But it's definitely growing, and the demand is growing, and I think it will become much more commonplace.
yeah, maybe it's, maybe part of that is, like you said, there, the demand. I mean, if it's not going through the taps fast enough, and it's more likely to spoil then because it doesn't have alcohol, maybe that's a factor.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, do you think that will be a big thing when you do get draft, that you're going to have to go around and do some sort of like maintain all the taps for the bars, or do you think?
Yeah, well, we're going into it cautiously, sort of making sure that you know that we've got a product that works in different venues, because obviously different cellars. Once the beer is at the keg is out there, you know, it's got to cope with whatever environment it finds itself in. So yeah, there's some development work to do there to make sure it's right.
And what's the biggest seller you have? Because you started with a lager, and you have IPAs, and I can't remember what other. And
Yeah.
you don't want to have just one beer. So,
Yeah.
what's the biggest demand? Is it still the lager?
It's still the lager, yeah. So our sales tend to kind of follow just general preferences for beer drinking. So our lager's our biggest seller, and then our IPA and pale ale are pretty split. And the stout is so not our biggest seller, but it's whenever I do tastings, it's the one that is most popular actually, because just people don't expect an alcohol-free stout. Obviously, with Guinness launching their 0.0, that helps.
Yeah.
But what I'm looking forward to is kind of making sure, you know, we've got our core range of four beers, four different styles, but kind of adding in more seasonals around that, collaborations and one-off beers, because I think that's what's kind of really interesting, is to kind of have the beers that you always want to have in your fridge, but then what's new, what's different. And there's like a lot of styles that haven't really been done well or done at all in alcohol-free yet. So I'm looking forward to cracking on with that too.
Right, it's a lot. Yeah, so sorry, just one thing before, because I'm sure you're, like I said, you have an awful lot on, so I'll let you go soon. But the branding, I just wanted to ask, because I was looking at, I mean, Jump Ship, and then your logo, where did all of that come from? Is it Jump Ship from alcoholic beer? Is it?
Yeah, and it's kind of my own sort of backstory as well. So I love sailing. So kind of the nautical side of it is kind of something that I enjoy. But there was definitely like I jumped ship into total unknown to launch this business, and there is that sense of I wanted something that was an invitation, because there's a bit of a hesitancy still about trying an alcohol-free. But I wanted something like, you know, jump ship, don't be scared to make a change, try something different. And then from Jump Ship, it kind of just took us into the nautical area with the nautical flags that we use to decorate the cans. The name of the beers all has a nautical link to it. So I guess it kind of comes back to anything. Like, I'll put something that I enjoy into it and hope other people like it too.
Yeah, I guess one of the things I was wondering was, like, that flag that you have as your logo, does that have a meaning nautically? Because I was...
Yes, so all the flags stand for letters. Okay. So the Jump Ship logo, we've got the J and the S flag there.
Okay.
The beer can, so like the Yardarm can, has got YAL for Yardarm Lager. Those are the three flags that we use. The Jack Staff actually has got an M and a C flag on it. It looks like the Saltire, but it's actually the M flag. So the Mosaic and Centennial hops that we use in the IPA. So I like to kind of have a meaning with all of the flags that we use, because if you are a bit nerdy and want to work out what it means, you can have a bit of fun with that too.
Yeah, the reason I was asking was I thought there might be some nautical meaning, but I thought also it looked almost like a kind of a stylized Scottish flag in a way. So I was
that was kind of a happy coincidence when we put it all together. We're like, oh yeah, look, this is a nice Scottish beer as well.
So you'll have your brewery. You'll be brewing in your new brewery by January. Are you opening a tap room there as well?
Not a tap room to begin with. So we're going to start off by doing a few brewery tours just to see who comes and have a chat to them about what they like and what they're interested in. Where we are is a lovely location for the summer. We're right, you know, next to a big wildflower meadow. So I think we'll do some pop-up weekend events over the summer, see who comes along. I mean, the joy is that you can drive and drive back. That's fine. So I think the next year we're just going to try out a few different things, see what works, see what people are interested in, and then kind of make a plan from that.
Yeah, I was wondering, I suppose what I was thinking of is, you mentioned earlier about tap rooms, you know, breweries wanting to bring in non-alcoholic into their tap room, but would you be bringing alcoholic into yours? You know, but if you're not planning that far ahead yet.
No. I mean, I think I like the idea of a purely alcohol-free space. It's kind of interesting. Lucky Saint have got their pub in London, and actually Lucky Saint, their lager is the only tap that's alcohol-free. The rest are alcohol. I think we'll just kind of learn this year to see what people like. But, you know, I'm quite keen to do like a alcohol-free festival in the summer and just get loads of interesting beers and non-alcoholic drinks in, have some music, some food, and just kind of see. I think people themselves kind of need to try it out and see, actually, I had a great afternoon and I didn't feel the need for an alcoholic pint, you know.
Yeah, no, that makes sense, because you do not, like you said, I mean, everything we do is associated with alcohol nearly everywhere.
Yeah.
Every time you go out, even if you're not the one drinking, someone is, and that's all. Yeah, having it.
But I think if you come away and you've had three pints of non-alcoholic beer, you still feel like you've had a drink in that kind of relaxing way, because your brain is, if you're a beer drinker and your brain is used to getting that buzz from a beer, it still gives it to you. there's interesting science behind it, but the placebo effect is real. So. I think that's kind of what I'd like people to discover, is that you can enjoy some great beers and not actually feel like you've missed out.
Yeah, once you don't have a placebo hangover the next day, because that would... All right. Listen, I'll let you go, because you've got canning lines, you've got, what you said, hoists to do and all that. Is there anything that I should have asked you that I forgot or was amiss on?
No. I think the other kind of interesting thing about our beers is we're all gluten-free and vegan
well.
Which kind of adds an extra complexity into our production, because lactose is quite often used as a filler in non-alcoholic beer, but it's also an allergen and non-vegan. So I kind of that developed as I developed the beers, just because if you are, they say, alcohol-free and celiac, your choices are so limited. So it's really nice just to have something that everyone can enjoy, and to say to a pub, you know, just have our beers in our fridge and anyone who walks through the door can drink them and you're sorted. So that's kind of been a nice part of the journey as well.
Good.
Although I would like to do a wheat beer at one point, and I'm not quite sure how we're going to do it. That won't stop us.
You might have to break the gluten rule or Just,
Definitely try have a go with buckwheat or something like that.
or I don't know, could you do sorghum or something like that?
Yeah.
Okay, listen, well then, thanks a million. It's a fascinating journey going from just like I want something without alcohol to ending up with your own brewery a couple of years later through COVID. You know, did you know it was going to be such a journey when you started, or did you have any idea?
No, I think I was hopelessly naive and optimistic.
That's the
But I think I wouldn't have got started if I'd known how difficult it was going to be.
Yeah,
And
that's
I
fair.
think the thing that I've found is that everything has been new and difficult and a learning curve. But you just knock them off one by one, and then you know how to do it for the next time. So yeah, I mean, massively proud and excited to have got to this point, and I kind of still just go walk into the brewery and it's like, oh my word, look at all this kit, we've actually done it. We're actually, it's nice to take a moment and go, well, this is where I wanted to get to, but getting there has certainly been a journey and a half.
Well, it's the journey you'll remember. So,
Indeed, indeed.
all right, Sonia, listen, thanks a million for taking the time. I'll let you get back to what is a very busy day and busy weeks coming up. So, thanks a million
Thank
for
you.
the time. And yeah, hopefully we'll keep an eye out and see the Jump Ship beers appearing
Yeah,
outside.
need to get some beers over to Ireland.
Even better. All
Great. All
right,
right. Thank you very much.
million.